My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Super Gencast. I'm Joel. I'm joined by Damon McDonald. It is Wednesday, 3rd of June, 2026. This is episode 411. How's it going, Damon?
411 is a joke in your town.
I don't know that song. Sorry.
It's 911.
Okay. All right.
Public Enemy. You don't know Public Enemy? Public Enemy number one. 5-0 said freeze, and I got numb.
Maybe.
Come on.
I don't know.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
I know that, yeah.
Okay, well, they had the song with Anthrax on there, Bring the Noise, right?
Yeah.
Like, bass, how low can you go? Death Row, what a brother knows. Come on, you know that song. You've heard it. I'm sure you have.
I'd recognize it if I heard it.
You probably would. Shame Joel for his lack of Public Enemy knowledge. Hi, how you doing, buddy? How you making out? It was a rough weekend.
Shaken up, yeah. I had a very. it's actually quite funny when I think about it. It was it's like something straight out of a sitcom or a comedy film. So, I'm just sitting minding my own business, trying to watch some Best of the Super Juniors, and then I hear a high pitched squeaking sounds. I'm like, uh oh, what's this? What's going on? So Scrumpy comes into the house with the most adorable little cute baby bunny in his mouth.
Oh god.
And it's still wriggling around, so I'm like, oh yeah, fuck, like this is terrible. I might be able to save it here. So I picked up Scrumpy and I thought, okay, if I grab him by the scruff of the neck, he'll drop the bunny. Oh, by the way, trigger warning, this story doesn't have a nice ending. So if you
I don't want to hear it. Honestly, it fucking gives me okay, just give me if you were to describe this to a child, what happened?
It was quite funny, just the comedic timing with which the things played out. So I carried Scrumpy up the hill, so I thought I'll get him to release the rabbit by the hedgerow, so then the rabbit can scamper off into the hedges, and then I'll bring Scrumpy back.
Yes.
So Scrumpy released the rabbit, and so I was like, okay, great. So I saw the rabbit hopping away. And I thought, I've done it. Yes, I've saved this poor little bunny's life. So carried Scrumpy back into the house. Tried to put Scrumpy in the house and shut the door, which is tricky because, you know, he knows his little rabbits out there. So I've got to try and put him in the house and then shut the door whilst I'm outside of the house and he's inside the house to make sure I can go and check the rabbits okay. So finally managed to do that.
Do you have hawks in the area? Do you have hawks in the area? Do you have flying birds in the area?
Finally managed to shut the door so not to, you know, hurt Scrumpy in the process. So turn around, see the rabbit. Oh, okay, there's the rabbit sort of hopping along the gravel path next to our house. And then the neighbor driving down the path.
Oh, God.
I'm just like watching in horror. I can't do anything. I'm not going to jump in front of the car and be like, stop, because I don't know this guy very well. So the car drives past and then... The front wheel misses the rabbit. I'm like, oh, God, thank God. And then the back wheel just goes splat.
Right
over the middle of it. And it was quick and painless. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. As I just opened the door, I was like, Scrumpy, go and have your rabbit. And he went out there and gobbled it up. So it's the circle of life, Damon. Scrumpy had a lovely treat. So all's well that ends well, right? Right? Yes? Yes? It's like a nice story for Scrumpy.
I hate these stories so much. Oh, I really do. I don't like them at all. Oh,
right, maybe I'll save them for the patron. Hey, speaking of the patron, mm-hmm. How about that interview with Kevin Kelly? That was good stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a good time. It was good catching up with him.
Plug the shit out of it, Damon, because there might be some people listening.
Plug the shit out of it.
Who haven't heard it yet?
Okay. Hey, I did. You know, we promised that we wanted to talk about the sale, and we wanted to cover it from all angles. And you know, here's a guy that had a contract with a new part owner of the company and a working partner for many years. So why not hear it from the horse's mouth and kind of get a little scoopsy if I could. And he was great. You know, every time he comes on, and you know it, Joel, every time he comes on, I just say, okay, I'm going to do a countdown and don't worry about time. If it goes long, you just do your thing, dude. And he's like, all right, I got you. And then boom, away we go. So yeah, it's up on our Patreon. And I encourage because not only did we talk about the sale, we kind of talked about Bushi Road and where things went right, where things went wrong. And him, you know, I think one of the cooler things is him talking about, you know, one, his mental health challenges and, you know, doing his best to overcome them. And it's a uphill climb every day and all of that. And I think a lot of people can relate with that. And, you know, the fact that, as we talked about, as the clouds clear, him really being excited at the prospect of getting back on the bike. So, you know, we'll see. Fingers crossed. And, you know, pro wrestling is a weird place. So who knows what'll happen. But, you know, it sounded like from the conversation, it was pretty positive. And, you know, I think it's a good thing. So fingers crossed. We'll see what happens. And, you know, that doesn't mean like we're pining for Walker Stewart to take a walk or Chris Charlton to get behind a desk and stop in front. That's not what we're saying at all. Kevin, honestly, it feels like he just wants to help and he has the bandwidth to do so. So
it might be the capacity as just a pure play-by-play commentator. I mean, there's so much he could be offering the company, right? Even beyond the scope of just that role. But
I mean, hopefully it opens up this sale, the possibilities are endless. And I know a lot of people are, you know, kind of projecting their wants on what this thing will look like eventually. But, you know, on the surface, there feels like there's plenty of opportunity and plenty of stuff for voice talent. So, you know, whether that's, you know, English commentary over the massive archive that isn't on World as of yet. So, you know, whatever that looks like, I think it's a good fit. I really do. So, we talked about that. We talked about a bunch of shit. So, yeah, what are we charging? $3 for it? You know, cheap. You know, I think it's
content
a pretty entertaining show.
Put up just like the last week alone. So not only you get my best of the Super Juniors daily audio, including an extra special episode with Chris Samsa that me and he recorded last night. There's your interview with Kevin Kelly, my interview with Paul Walsh from the Emerald Flow Show. I'm picking the sale from a different angle, and I think that was really interesting as well. It was really great to have Paul on and understand insight from the Noah perspective, from a guy who's, you know, familiar with Cyber Agent and all the workings of Wrestle Universe and all that stuff to approach it from that angle. So we have just got you covered from all possible angles. The best value patron in the New Japan podcasting sphere, bar none. Get your fucking wallets out. $10. That's nothing. Some people say, when I plug it, and they say, oh, cost of living crisis. Don't give me that. Think about the things that you, listener, if you're not already subscribed, that you would pay $10 on. Just absolute nothing. Pointlessness.
Trash.
Yes. How dare you?
We want your money. No. And I will
I'm
say this.
I'm buying a new car. Well, I'm desperate for the money.
You know? Trust me, I got plenty I got to pay for. The good news also is that if you do enjoy the interviews, it kind of... I've been trying to find a thing to do for Patreon for a while. And I just never really felt 1,000% comfortable. And trust me, I still don't. But... it's there, and Joel has built it like no one else. And he, you know, it's a thing now. And I think I need to dip my toes into that. That being said, there's more interviews planned. I have one booked for next week. I'm not going to disclose who it is. And I'm working on it.
I don't even know who it is. I'm excited. Don't
tell
me. I want to see that pop up on the feed, and then I'll enjoy it like the rest of the subscribers.
I have a...
I don't even want in on the editing process. Send it to Dan, get him to edit it, and then send it to me with a mystery name.
Mm.
And then I'll upload it with no...
Mr. X.
Damon interviews Mr. X, and then I'll listen to it and get the excitement of finding out who it is. Then I'll go back and edit the file on Patreon so people know what it actually is. That's what's going to happen.
Perfect. I'm down for that. That is scheduled for Wednesday, so... a week from today. So, yep, that's good. And like I said, I have a couple other emails that I actually sent. You know what the worst part is? It's not doing the interview. It's sending the email. Like, I'm like, oh, this person's never going to fucking respond. And then I get all fucking, you know what I mean? I get all down in the dumps. I'm like, no, we're no good, man. No, we're not that high.
Reply to you say, how dare you? No way am I doing an interview with you. I hate you.
I'm waiting for that, actually. Yeah. So we'll see. Again, I think, look, I listened back to it, and sometimes I think, oh my God, I can almost smell the smoke coming out of your head trying to get out a question. You thick-tongued, babbling dope. But then there's other times where I'm like, that's not bad, pretty good. So again, I think there's plenty of room for growth, but I'm excited for it. I think, it's probably the best thing I can do for the show. So if I can do anything, let's do that. And I'm going to do it. And I'm going to knock the fucking ball out of the park, as they say.
I suppose we've got to do the football post-mortem, haven't we? That's what...
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Do they?
Yeah.
Well, see, here's the thing. Can I give you a little brief story? So... I was watching the game from home, and then it went on for 500 years. So I went out and
it was a boring game.
I was rooting for you. You know what I mean? I was rooting for you, Dan, and all that. And then I went to the restaurant, and it was on. And there were Arsenal supporters there, and it was still. And then it went into the overtime, and okay, yeah, you can take it from there, dude. But trust me, I was with you in spirit.
So yeah, I went down to London to watch it, and just even on the train ride down there, I was just flicking through social media as you do, and there was one of the hype videos that from the official Arsenal account, and they made one with Tom Hiddleston, the guy who plays Loki in the Marvel.
Yes. Yes.
Not that I watch those films. He's an Arsenal supporter. And it just the social media stuff that Arsenal do is absolutely impeccable. And it just, it's just edited just so perfectly to... Why does the cat always... Why is it the second I fucking hit record,
this cat
appears? I am going to remove him from the room because he is just going to annoy me. Come here, my little boy.
Why don't you just get a cage full of rabbits and let them dig in? Ugh, gross. Oh, I hate those stories so much. Oh, my God.
Right. The cat is gone. So.
All right.
I was watching this little hype video, and when it showed an image of the European Cup, the Champions League trophy, which Arsenal have never won, of course. And I just started choking up. I just teared up on the train.
Oh.
There's a lady sitting next to me just sort of giving me weird looks. So I'm looking at this trophy like, And at that moment, then the sort of the gravity of the situation sunk in. I was like, fuck, this is the biggest match in club football. And we're there, right on the doorstep. It is there for the taking. And admittedly, against the best team in the world. I just felt anxious and sick and nervous for the rest of the day. So I went down to Chinatown, got some food. I had a delicious banh mi baguette.
Yes.
Vietnamese baguette from a place called Banh Mi Keu, K-E-U. So any London-based listeners, do check that out because it was absolutely incredible. Then went and met my friend Nikki at the place called Between the Bridges. So it's an outdoor venue in between Westminster Bridge and Hungerford Bridge on the South Bank. And so you're outside, little, you know, bars everywhere, food court, huge TV screen with a London Eye in the background. So
picturesque. Proper hype club.
Yeah. Yes. But I honestly, I never felt good. I never felt confident. I never thought we were going to win it. And I saw the lineup, and you know, we're starting with our second choice left back and our third choice right back. And I was a bit like, ugh. I'd love that we picked Miles Lewis-Skelly in midfield, who's a 19-year-old kid who's come through our academy. Who, you know, there was some talk that he wasn't getting many minutes this season, that he might be sold, and that would have broken my heart. So for him to be picked in a Champions League final is just incredible. Like having two graduates from the Arsenal Hairland Academy in the starting 11 is just really, really nice feeling. But the game kicked off and we scored after like, what was it, 6 minutes or something. And it
very
was
quickly. One of
those goals where it goes in at the near post. And whenever it goes in at the near post, it takes me about like 20 seconds for my brain to actually process what's happened. Because I'm like, has it gone wide? Is it hit like the outside of the back of the net from the advertising? Like, what has happened here? And then when my brain sort of pieced together the information, like, oh my God, we've actually scored. Like Kai Havertz has actually scored a worldie. And then at that point, then I just felt absolutely terrified, because it's like, then you've actually got something to lose. You know, right. You put it in your hands there. And I was like, oh no. Because I know Arsenal, and I know when we go ahead in games against tough opposition, we just like retreat into our shell. I just don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a directive or a psychological thing, but I was just like, oh God, there's absolutely no way we're going to hold out against this PSG team for like 85 minutes now. So I was just trying to block the intrusive thoughts, not that we were going to lose, but that we were going to win. So my brain was like, just conjuring up like, oh, what if we win? Just imagine like when that final whistle goes, if it's 1-0, how are you going to feel? And I was just trying to block that out from my mind, because we were getting, in terms of possession, dominated. But I think defensively, it was a real masterclass, like a really heroic performance where, you know, every man just made sure they were disciplined and in position and tracking back and covering. And this is a Paris Saint-Germain team, and I'm going to do all the usual caveats of them being funded by Qatar, nation state, and all the absolute bullshit about their owner also being a member of the executive board of UEFA, and the owner of beIN Sports, and the massive amount of funding they put into UEFA via various business deals, and all the conflict of interests that entails, and the fact that since those business deals were signed, PSG have won all of the Champions League competitions. Not that I think it's predetermined or anything, but you know, I can't help but feel fingers were on the scales somehow, and that there was a point in the match where I feel the referee turned on us. And you know, maybe we deserved that, maybe our reputation for time wasting, there was time wasting going on, it was a bit egregious, and just little things like the referee blowing for halftime before we had a chance to take the corner
kick. Yeah. Yeah.
That felt quite vindictive. I'm not saying it wasn't deserved, but at that point I was just like, oh no, like we've lost the referee here. And especially after halftime, it felt like something had changed. Like someone had had a word with the referee and it just felt like he was out to get us. So we were playing very deep and defensively and we could not get out. And you know, a lot of that is down to PSG. And again, right, this is a PSG team that's just destroyed everyone. They put 8 goals past Chelsea. They put like 6 goals past Bayern Munich. So whilst it might have been a fun game for the neutral if we had played beautiful free-flowing attack in football and they'd stuck, you know, 4 goals past us, part of me thinks we were vindicated in playing the way we did, because they didn't manage to score in open play over 120 minutes. And that is you know, pretty incredible achievement in and of itself, given the relative stature of the two teams. Not that we haven't spent money, but again, this is a club that's been bankrolled by a nation state rich with oil money. It's not fair, and you know, it's not a level playing field there. So I think
Arsenal have no touch of that kind of money?
We got a sponsorship deal with Emirates, but you know, there's sponsorship deals, and then there's what happens at clubs like PSG and Manchester City, where it's, you know, very, they don't even do you a very good job in covering up the fact that, you know, all of that wealth from the nation state's oil is going into the club for the purposes of sports washing, so that when you think about Qatar, you think, oh, the World Cup and Messi lifting the World Cup, right, and oh, Qatar, Paris Saint-Germain and Dembele and winning the Champions League, and not thinking about, you know, the thousands of migrant workers who died under horrendous conditions
constructing
the stadiums, right? So there's that element of it. But the second half, I felt the few attempts that we made to try and hit PSG on the counter, the referee was just giving us nothing. Like, if our players went shoulder to shoulder with a PSG defender and the PSG defenders like throwing themselves to the ground, free kick. Like, PSG getting free kicks for absolute bullshit. And likewise, when they fouled Arsenal players, referee just, nope, play on, nope, that's fine.
Yeah, whistles went in the pocket, yeah.
Exactly. There was that instance when Noni Madueke came on and he was bundled over. And I can kind of see why that might not have been given, because Madueke sort of had, I think it was Nuno Mendes, had his arm like tied up with him and kind of pulled him on top of him. I get that, but there are other things. Well, there was a moment when Jurrien Timber span a defender on the edge of the box and the defender just fell over and the referee blew. I was like, what is this? What's going on? And yeah, we held out pretty well. But then, like I said, we got this, I think he's 21, Mosquera, 21 or 22, our third choice right back. He's not even a right back. He's a centre back who was only playing there because the other options weren't fit, who just was given a booking for time wasting after about 30 seconds of the second half, which, you know, I can kind of see it from the perspective of if Arsenal were doing cumulative time wasting, then, you know, he's the player that gets booked because that's, you know, sort of the last straw rather than anything that Mosquera did by himself. But him getting booked and then Saka getting booked in quick succession for another thing that I thought was absolute bollocks just basically nullified our right wing, because those were our two players on the right that were there to deal with Kvicha Kvaratskhelia, who is PSG's best player, their left winger. So we had two players on a yellow card dealing with the best left winger in the world, which puts you on an absolute knife edge and means you can't do certain things for fear of getting a second booking and getting sent off. So I think maybe that kind of freaked out Mosquera enough to the point where he did make a rash challenge. It was a nice move that PSG did. One of their few times they did get in behind us, and Mosquera made a challenge he shouldn't have made, brought Kvaratskhelia down. Can't really complain. It was a penalty. And then that was it. When they equalised, I was like, well, fuck, like it's done now. It seemed inevitable to me with the amount of possession that PSG had that they would just, you know, tighten the noose further and inevitably end up scoring. You know, they've got players who can just crack in shots into the corners, low XG chances as they did against us last year. But again, to our credit, they didn't really create much else. I thought we did a really good job shutting them out. And I had hoped that with our substitutions, we might be able to actually offer a bit more attacking threat as the game went on. But our attack is not very good, Damon. It's not elite, right? The fact that we've won the Premier League and made it to the Champions League final with a pretty anemic forward line is a minor miracle in and of itself. Now, our defence is absolute elite. It is world class. We are the best out of possession team on the planet. But our wingers, strikers are a bit crap, okay? I don't think there's any secret of that, and I think that's the next thing we need to address in this team.
Could be better.
Yeah, when we did go forward, it was a little bit disjointed. We managed to carve out like a couple of chances. There was one for Gyökeres right at the end where the PSG player managed to get a block. That was the moment I was like, oh, God, that was the moment. That was when we could have scored. But, I think we were, fair to say, outplayed throughout the course of the match and didn't really offer enough going forward. Maybe if we'd been a bit more bold and less defensive, we might have offered a bit more threat and taken some more chances. It's just the fact that we scored so early meant, you know, defending for our lives for 85 minutes, well, no more than that, in, you know, the hot late evening sun and everyone's getting tired. You get tired legs, you get nervous. And that leads you to the situation of the penalty shootout. Now, yeah, when it went to penalties, I thought, you know, that's probably better for us because I couldn't really see us scoring much in normal time or extra time. But I'd never felt good about it. Like, we were never ahead in that penalty shootout. So I was just standing there with my mate, Nicky, and we feed off each other's nervous energy. So we were just like there, arm in arm, just looking absolutely sick. And I think perhaps going second in the shootout might have rattled us a bit, and doing it in front of the PSG fans, like the fact that we were constantly sort of playing catch up in the shootout, as is the nature of a penalty shootout when you do go second. And again, like when you have two players who fail to hit the target in a penalty shootout in, you know, the biggest club game in the world, that's
it's a big net. That's
and I understand exactly, right? I understand they're tired and nervous, and I'm sure put in the same position, I would probably just trip over my own feet and shit myself. But again, for an elite Premier League winning player to not hit the target, that's not acceptable, right? And then, you know, when that happens, you think, well, fuck, you know, if we failed to hit the target twice, we didn't deserve to win this. At the same time, I still think we left it all out there, and we should be proud of ourselves. We can be proud of ourselves for, you know, the way we took the game to penalties like that. Again, that's an achievement in and of itself. And yeah, I was heartbroken for that. I just felt absolutely sick. And, you know, the group of friends that I was with, they were sort of saying goodbye to me and saying, I'll see you at the parade tomorrow. And I was just kind of catatonic. I was just like, yeah, okay. Like, I couldn't move. I couldn't leave the venue. I was just letting it all wash over me. I even had like people, a lady come up to me saying, are you okay? And like offered me a hug because I looked so dejected. And I managed to drag myself out of that venue, and I just sort of sat next to the banks of the River Thames, and just, I must've been there for about an hour, just like trying to process what happened and the enormity of it, and just thinking, fuck, you know, that was such a great chance. To go to penalty shootouts where it's you know, we were two kicks away against a crap goalkeeper. Like, the PSG goalkeeper didn't look like he was going to save anything. And then, yeah.
You guys got the save too. You guys made a big stop on that penalty kick, one of the penalty kicks.
Yep.
And I really thought that was like the momentum shift, you know, yep, here we go. And
And I was just sort of trudging through London. And then Mally phoned me, or I phoned Mally, because I was planning to stick around for the parade the next day, but even though it was making me anxious because I didn't like the idea of, like, you know, a million people packed into all these tight streets. And I was anxious about, you know, missing my train home and all that. It was the last day, my half-term holiday. So had I stayed for the parade, I would have, yeah, straight to work the next day, very little sleep. So Mally phoned me, or I phoned, I can't remember who phoned who. And then, like, the kids were on the phone and they're like, daddy, come home. And Mally's like, oh, we miss you. And I was like, you know what? I just don't feel up to that parade. So I it was too late for the last train. I stayed in my hotel. Didn't really sleep much at all. And then just got the first train out there in the morning. And I know that probably sounds bad that I didn't stick around to cheer for the players and celebrate the tremendous achievement of winning the Premier League. But I just wasn't in the mood for a parade. Just the logistics of it, the fact that it realistically would have meant me basically standing in one spot for like 8 hours. On the last day of my half time, I thought, no, I need to get home to begin the healing process with my family. So I got a train and I managed to make it back by about 10:30 in the morning, which is good, and met Mally and the kids at McDonald's and just sort of took my mind off things for them. And that was nice to just spend the day with them. And, you know, my parents came over and we had a nice Chinese takeaway in the evening, and I was able to have a relaxing final day of my half term and kind of take my mind off things a bit. But you know, with a bit of distance and reflection on things, I'm still sad. You know, it's, how could you not be, to be, to lose on penalties? That's just absolutely heartbreaking. But I'm optimistic. I believe in the team. I'm optimistic we'll get back there. And, you know, in a way, I think it's good to still have that North Star to aim for, isn't it? Like, if we'd won both the Premier League and the Champions League in quick succession, then we'd have completed football, right? What joy is there left to strive for? I don't know how I would have felt afterwards. Like, probably ecstatic, but, you know, there's a little bit of me. I'd forgotten how much it hurt when we lost the last Champions League final in 2006, and I was, 19 years old, however old I was then. So, mate, again, this is just me trying to huff the copium here, but perhaps me and the fans and the team need to feel that sting of defeat to motivate us to go again. Because if, and hopefully when we get back to a Champions League final, if we win, it's going to be even sweeter because of what we're all going through now and feeling that pain, rather than just having that double whammy in short succession of first Premier League for 22 years and then first ever European Cup. Like, it'd be like having your birthday close to Christmas. I think, you know, you want to separate the joy of those two events. It's, you know, it's Kikuchi booking. It was the Kikuchi moment. There's going to be a next chapter to it. So, I mean, I'm fucked off now, Damon. I'm utterly sick to my stomach of getting bantered off by all the clubs who have previously won a European Cup. They all started doing it, like, you know, Nottingham Forest and Aston Villa and Chelsea all, you know, posting stuff immediately on social media of the European Cups they've won, because, you know, social media has just become the, you know, lowest common denominator rage bait engagement farming, where, you know, the objective is to piss as many people off as you can to get the most people engaging with your content. So it's not a real place. It's not a real forum for any kind of
communication, right?
Absolutely not. It's just like, right, how many people can I enrage immediately? So that pissed me off. And even the clubs that have won minor European trophies, like won the Europa League or the Europa Conference League, which is
they can shut the fuck up.
That is just absolutely preposterous. Like, but these teams that have won these Mickey Mouse competitions, you think they can use that as a stick to beat us with? I mean, it's not really worth, it's not worth taking seriously and dignifying with response, but just all this shit collectively is just making my blood boil. But maybe, just maybe, we need that to keep the fire burning, because if they think we're insufferable now, just wait until we get our hands on that trophy, because it's gonna be a whole new game.
They haven't killed you, you know what I mean? They haven't killed you. That's the biggest mistake. What was greater, the joy of winning Premier League or the loss of the Champions League, the way it was lost?
The Champions League one, I just felt numb afterwards. When I saw Gabriel sky that penalty over the bar, it was just like emptiness. It wasn't, you know, dagger to the heart or anything. It was just like I imagine like a child might feel letting go of a helium-filled balloon. Mm. And be like, oh, it's gone.
Hello, it's darkness, my old friend.
Yeah, it wasn't like, again, at no point did I think we're actually going to win this.
Really?
No.
Not even when it went to the shootout?
No. I felt bad the whole way through it. Even when our players were putting the ball in the net, even when David Raya made the save from Mendes, I didn't cheer or celebrate, because I knew we weren't going to win. I can't explain.
Do you like watching these games?
No.
This season is
absolute hell for me.
Don't do it. Stop putting yourself through this. Like, you're not going to get a fucking, you know, a bonus fan card, you know, by putting yourself through that. Just fucking walk away. If they win, you go back and watch the fucking game. If they lose, you just say, fuck me. And you walk away. Like, that's how I handled the Leafs, dude. I got to be honest with you. That's exactly how I handled the Leafs. When it got to those game sevens, I wouldn't even watch them. I wouldn't even fucking turn them on. I would just, like, I would just look at Cheryl, and Cheryl would look at her phone, and she would either be, you know, a yes or, and that would be it. You know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't put myself fucking through it anymore.
Yeah, and the thought of geeing myself up to watch another season remotely like this one, that just exhausts me. I can't do that. I cannot put as much emotionally into following them as much as I did this season. So
yes, you can.
I might
yes,
have to dial things back. I'm not like torturing myself with trips to London to watch stuff.
You will be right there. Stop it. Stop that. Stop that silly talk. You're in. It's in your. And here's the thing, too, dude. You won the fucking Premier League. I want you to fucking remember that. Like, you are champions of England. And no one can take that away. would it be awesome to have walked away with that even grander prize, maybe in people's eyes? Sure, absolutely. But don't fucking, like, don't, you know, turn your back on what your team did. Like, you, I told you before, and you can say and take it to the grave that your team was the best in the league. Can I give you a perspective from a person who maybe didn't have any fucking dogs in a fight, but, obviously rooting for them for you. Can I give you the very brief synopsis of the game?
Please.
Champions.
Please do.
You took a team that you said was the best team on planet Earth and took them to kicks. You took them to basically a skills competition. You know what I mean? Like, anything can fucking happen in a shootout. And, you know, unfortunately, the coin flip didn't go your way. But you took the best team on planet Earth, and everyone said that, well, you know what, you probably aren't going to win the game. And you even went into the game thinking, you know what, this is going to be a tough fucking road to hoe. Yet, the team that you support took them to penalty kicks. And not just like, okay, they netted three or two or however many you need to win, and, you know, like, there were multiple kicks. I hate the way the games end like that in a shootout, and hockey does that. They don't do it in the playoffs. You play till the fucking sun comes up. It doesn't matter. You play until, you know, because to me, it's in the league, you know, when you're in the playoffs and battling for the Stanley Cup, you can't just let one skill determine who wins. Now, I get it. You have TV time, and there's a whole litany of reasons why they have to go to a shootout. I get it. They could be there till the sun comes up. But, like, know that, like, it wasn't like it was a blowout. It wasn't like you didn't deserve to be on the pitch. It wasn't, you know.
Last year, in the final, when they made it to the final last year against Inter, they won 5-0.
Okay. There you go. Like, so that's nothing to be ashamed of. Now, again, people are going to fucking kick you when you're down. That's just the nature of living in today's world and having any type of online presence. Like, you're going to get the boots. You know, whatever. You turn off your fucking phone for a couple of days. You'll be back. You'll be back. And there's nothing wrong with it. Again, these massive games, it's easier said than done to be like, just don't fucking watch it. How do you do that? You're in a good spot. You know, obviously you're going back to Champions League next year. And so that's not going, you know, you're obviously in. And again, you're going to be defending the crown. Like, you shouldn't hang your head. I know it was very difficult that day because it was so close. It was in grasp. I get it. Don't hang your head, dude. Be proud of your fucking team. Wear the fucking kit with pride. As you should. I get the parade, like, just a massive amount of people, the fucking tube afterward. I'd want to put a fucking gun in my mouth. But, like, and that, I mean, that, like, trust me, there, I would probably be in the same boat as you, of just being in my room and be like, I'm just going to bed, and we'll wake up in the morning, I'm going home. For all the reasons you listed. But again, from an outsider looking in, and trust me, there were plenty of people at that bar/restaurant that were watching that. Every TV was on with that on. There's no one that walked out of there and been like, well, fucking, they didn't. No, that wasn't the case. So that's all I got to say about that one.
And another little caveat here. Perhaps next time we get there, my children might be old enough to really enjoy it and watch it with me. And that could be a nice family moment.
There you go. Now you're talking. All right. You feeling better now?
Yeah. That was very cathartic.
See? There you go. See? They know what they call me? Mr. Cathartic. They don't call me. They've never said that. All right. Where are you going to take us now? Where are you going to take us now, old rabbit killer?
Let's talk about Best of the Super Juniors.
All right.
no more Daily Order. I'm glad that's over.
I bet.
Do any more of that again. But with that being said, I thought today's show from Corroquin Hall, with an attendance of 1,255, was a bloody great wrestling show. Maybe one of my favorite New Japan shows of the year.
Wow. All right. Now we're talking. Now we're cooking with gas. Yeah, I liked it a lot too. And I thought, like, there were matches that I really, really enjoyed. I think by and large, again, some of this stuff was hokey. But some of the stuff also, you know, some of that hokiness landed. Perfect example is Taguchi and Jun Kasai. Like, again, there was goofiness, but like, I actually, Joe, I swear on my father's grave, the spot with the ladder, the quote ladder, and him in the goggles and the fucking, that was funny.
I was like howling. I was actually,
lived.
It was incredible. And yes. Getting the Young Lions to hold the ladder as well.
Right. Right, with all the bullshit online and that I did see with everybody upset over the spot. It was funny. It truly was. I did laugh. So they, you know, they did a good job there. I thought the show was very good. And I think, you know, going into the semis and the finals, I think we're in for great stuff. Look, and I said this to you before as well. You know, I don't think I don't think there's anybody on planet Earth that does a better job of guy shouldn't win and doesn't win, but yet looks fucking almost as good, if not better than the person who did win. Like, they do that match just chef's kiss when they do that. They do it the best. And I'll die on that fucking hill. But yeah, this was a show worth watching. Absolutely. And I kind of think that we expected, as you know, you get out of the fucking meat grinder of a tournament. You know, we had, what do we have, day 8 last time we did a show. And again, that was, you're in the middle of the fucking tour. They're just trying to get out of there healthy. But now we're into the meaty end. We're into the stuff that matters. So, you know, when it's time to hit, I think New Japan hits, and we're in hitting mode.
So we started off with the B block show, defeated Jacob Austin Young, 3:06 by TKO. I will admit that I also laughed when the Scary Clown Man appeared.
Oh, really?
Jake Lee made his return. I thought it was very well executed with Jacob Austin Young disappearing behind that door, and then Show and Dick Togo following him, and then them coming back out the door, scrambling away in terror, and you're thinking, who are they so frightened of? And then the payoff did not disappoint, because the silly clown face.
It is terrible.
And look, I'm also terrified by the thought of having to watch Jake Lee wrestle. So there's that. And I quite enjoy the heel versus heel dynamics in these round robin tournaments, because it's something we rarely see. And I like the chemistry of the two different flavors of heel and how they counter each other and who turns out being the de facto babyface. So it was quite fun to see United Empire anticipating, responding to the House of Torture tropes, like doing their own illegal bell ring to make the House of Torture wrestler think that they've won via submission. I was kind of hoping this would be a really cool moment for Jacob Austin Young to out-cheat the cheater, which would have been great. But the finish they did come up with was it Yujiro dressed up as some miscellaneous United Empire masked wrestler?
Right.
Probably the stupidest finish to a New Japan match I've ever seen in my entire life. And think about the ground that covers. It was utterly preposterous.
Yeah. Yeah. You described it perfectly in the sense of who's going to, you know, out-heel each other. Yeah. I mean, it was creative in the sense that, you're right. It was who's going to get the one up on the fuckery. Jake Lee can get up the street. Look, if you like the clownness, is he a mime? Is that what he's trying to do? Like, cause he does the little pantomimey stuff, and I don't know. I'm good. If we need to cut money, let's start with Jake Lee. I'm fucking fine with that. And this was short. But yeah, I mean, you can imagine with a House of Torture and United Empire with people at ringside. You can imagine the nonsense. But it was, you know, nothing hurt. You know what I mean? Like, nothing was just like, oh, I got to hit the fucking fast forward button. It was quick. It was painful. It was like getting a fucking, you know, like a flu shot. You know, you had to get through it. You know, it doesn't necessarily hurt. It's more annoying. You're like, okay, we're done. And it was a flu shot match.
Brilliant. That's an incredible analogy there. Okay, second match then was the B block. Taiji Ishimori defeating Kushida, 6 minutes and 20 seconds via Bloody Cross. This, by contrast, was fucking great. This is two absolute pros with lots of history, of course. You know, that was a Tokyo Dome match at one point. Making use of every second of that 6 minutes and 20 to wash the taste of the previous match away. Just sensational stuff. The grappling, the pinning combinations, the limb work, the submissions, flawless pacing, and built up the drama to a fever pitch with that rolling cradle back and forth where the crowd were absolutely living and dying by every back and forth roll. And just a wonderful finish with Ishimori reversing. I think he was caught in the hoverboard lock, wasn't he? And then did a one-armed bloody cross. So like automatically gets an extra star for a finish incorporating the injured limb. I think both these guys have had really good tournaments. I love it very much.
Kushida, look, he's obviously not what he once was. I think everyone would agree. Ishimori feels like he's hit or miss, and that's Taiji Ishimori. That's, you know, but I think the two of these guys together are, you know, they're just comfortable together. I mean that in the best possible way. It wasn't like lazy comfortable. It was, I know what we're going to do five steps before we actually do it. And you're right. The sequences, nothing felt rushed, but nothing felt like we were just kind of going through motions. Like it felt like it really did feel like a fight, but not like a, you know, an MMA style fight, but a true junior heavyweight style fight. Technically sound. I will say this, and this is just, that's not even like a quibble. I hate barefooted wrestlers. It just, because it skeeves me out. I always think they're going to stub their toe. I just can't imagine, why would you get into a fucking ring barefoot? It drives me nuts. And I got to be honest with you, not sanitary at all. That aside, Joel. I mean, look, if you said, hey, Kushida, hey, Taiji Ishimori, we need you to go out there, go 5-6 minutes, give us a solid second match of the show. And just like you said, wash the taste of the first match out of our mouths a little bit. I don't think I could trust two guys more, especially those two guys working together. Are you surprised? I know we're down cycling certain guys, but are you surprised like where Kushida, where Taiji Ishimori landed in the standings?
No, not really. I think there was one of the few interesting stories of the tournament with Ishimori insisting that he was going to become the oldest Best of the Super Juniors winner. But at the same time, I feel he's more of a junior tag guy than a commodity in the junior singles division. I think that's kind of passed him by at this point. So no qualms about that at all. Kushida, I've said in my Patreon audio that I still think he's really good. Yeah. I don't think, if I watch like a 2016 Kushida match and a 2026 Kushida match, I don't know if I'd be able to, you know, if you did the blind taste test and say, right, which is which, I'm not sure I could tell the difference because he's still really fucking good. And I think there is still value in him, not necessarily as junior champion, but I do wonder if we could be doing more with him because he's still really good.
Yeah. Now, again, this might be a situation of, hey, you know, selective matches, we're going to, you know, fire it up a little bit. And again, I think both these guys are in a downward trend of their career, and that's fair to say. But I think like the one thing that kind of hit home for me a little bit, and it's not like this is like was like a revelation or anything, and it wasn't like, oh, you know, I'm shocked to have this thought pop into my head, because we are where we are. I think it was just a confirmation of time doesn't stop. And even though these guys are, again, they're not Tenzan, mind you, but they're not going to be the focal point of the promotion when it comes to the juniors. Even so, like, it is a bit of a testament to both those guys of how, again, I use the word comfortable a lot, but they really feel like they are two peas in a pod. And
it's like having sex with an ex-girlfriend or something.
Yes.
Like a hookup.
There you go.
You know what each other likes, and it's
yep.
just
yep.
you stick back into that, and the chemistry's there, and you're like, yep. oh, yeah, that was good.
You know that in 2 minutes in, if you go for the one spot, you know, and I mean that literally and figuratively, yes, that is a good analogy as well. Yes, it's like two former lovers getting together, and they just know how to please the other person. That is an accurate description. I have a boner now.
Turn back to the B-block with Zel Desperado defeating Yoshinobu Kanemaru. 5:42, Pinche Loco. Look, I will applaud Despy for his restraint in not making this a 27-minute main event and not booking himself into the latter stages of this tournament. This match was good. Didn't need the ref bump at all. The most exciting part were the pinning exchanges at the end. And whilst this match was solid, perhaps a bit underwhelming, I think they were kind of shown up a bit by what Kushida and Ishimori did. And considering the history between these guys as tag partners, I thought they might go for something a bit more creative or a bit more intense. I felt it was largely paint by numbers. I think they played it a bit safe. So I came away from this thinking, expected a bit more.
I maybe we can ring up Chris Samso on this. Maybe he discussed it on your Patreon review. I'd be curious as to how many ref bumps we've had in this tournament, because it feels like we've had a lot. Maybe it's there. Those are just sticking in my head more, but honestly, we have at least two a show, don't we?
Yeah, they've been a heavy feature in Kanemaru matches and show matches and Junkosai matches.
Yeah. I mean, and then we've had other ones occur as well. It's just like, I wish they would find, I know it's hard to get through a tournament. I understand that. I wish they would just table the idea of ref bumps. Like, let's think of something else. Let's do something different. Because yeah, it does seem to be a bit, I don't know, maybe it's just sticking out a little bit for me. In this Best of the Super Junior, it's I would say a lot of them are really unnecessary. And here's the thing too: the majority of them don't even result in the finish. Like, it's just a spot in the match, and you're just like, okay, you're doing this just so they could, you know, do a table spot or do interference. Like, is that what we're doing? Like, it doesn't feel like they have any, I don't want to say purpose, but they don't really feel like they play a factor in a finish where you would expect a ref bump to occur. But all right, whatever. You know, it's a small finger wag.
The fourth match was the B block. Yo defeating Daisuke Sasaki, 9:42 via 5-star clutch. Now, I'm assuming this was Yo's DDT tryout against DDT mainstay Sasaki. Daisuke, come on. Yo was fantastic. Put in a good word with Sanshiro Takagi. It's not a problem. Cyber agent, yep. HR will make sure the transfer goes through smooth as silk. They don't even need to send anyone in return. Do not worry about it at all. We all saw the little fox spirit, the Gongitsune horseshit. They absolutely love it. You're hired. The only blot in the audition process was the bit of actually kind of good wrestling at the end of the match, but they're willing to overlook it as long as he promises to never do it again, or do it, you know, with his cock out, or do it while doing poo yeah. or something like that.
Yeah.
Seriously, Damon, this guy was wrestling like it was the second match on a Road 2 show. It was boring as fuck. And this is one of the guys out of four they picked to go through to the semifinals. Well, we've got guys like, you know, Titan and Akira and Robbie X and Junker Sai sitting on their hands for the latter stage of the tournament. What the fuck is going on? What? Who does Yo have photos of? He fucking stinks.
I hate
him. Shit his goofy ass off the DDT before I declare a fatwa on him for his crimes against wrestling. Yo!
Fatwa?
Yo! Yo in a semi-final again! Yo!
He's homegrown talent.
This is a fucking disgrace.
He's a homegrown talent, dude. He's a homegrown talent. That's what I can give you. And I'm sure somebody's going to hit us up and be like, "Wow, he sells merch there, and the women love him. You see the signs and." I just hope and pray that he's, you know, puts in a halfway decent performance and loses in the semis. That's the best I can give you. He's not for me. He's a massive disappointment to where, you know, when those guys went out, showing Yo went away on excursion. Like, let's put it this way. The fucking Tempura boys were better. You know what I mean? Like, and that was like, ugh. You know, like this, I don't know. I don't know. I don't get it. He is Radiohead in the world of Oasis. Let's put it that way. You know what I mean? Like, you're too artsy fartsy for me. Get the fuck up the street.
Fifth match was the B block. Robbie Eagles defeated Hyo in 8 minutes, 34 seconds via Ron Miller special. So the Bob lock locks up the Bob block.
Wow.
That would probably sound better in an American accent. Hyo needs to be wrestling people like Robbie Eagles week in, week out. Like, if they're serious about him, there's like definite upside there. I've said before, he looks great, very fast, very athletic. I think the talent is there. He just needs training and improvement and experience. And I suspect he will be someone that New Japan will be looking at again in the future. There's potential there, even if the start and the gimmick is not to my taste. But the match was okay. I was just mainly absolutely thrilled to hear that announcement at the end about Robbie Eagles winning the block. Because I got scared there because I didn't understand what they were saying.
And you couldn't hear them, right? Out. Yeah.
Yeah. I was absolutely shitting myself. I was like, oh God, what is happening? Are they going to do an angle here? Are they going to make it a three-way? Are they going to have like an eliminator match? I was terrified. But it turned out to be quite a satisfying little angle. And this makes up for the Champions League final defeat a little bit. I'm a very happy man. I know Robbie had his little COVID run with the title, but that is insufficient. He needs more. I hope this means the company is starting to see the enormous value that he brings to this company. And I'm just absolutely over the moon that he's won the block and we're going to be seeing at least one more Robbie Eagles match with high stakes now. And think how great he's going to be in that.
Yeah, with time and the stakes, correct?
And against his boy. It's against his boy. Yeah. How is that not going to be like my ceiling for that match is sky high.
Me too. And again, I think we there was some of us that kind of pined for, man, imagine if that were the final, right? You know, if the blocks were different, you know, all the logistics aside, but imagine if that were the final. Listen, we get it in a semi. I'll take it. And I'll go so far as to say this. A lot of times, in whether it be Best of the Super Junior, whether it be World Tag League, whether it be G1, how many times has the semi-main events been better than the finals? There have been a few. So if anybody, again, if I'm asking anybody to deliver in that type of scenario, you know, young, still plenty in the tank, the idea of a mentor, student, the idea of a guy who is presumably the face of the juniors for years to come, the guy that has a lot of stock against a guy who, again, the teacher, the guy who has always been close. And again, he's had that cup of coffee with the title, but you know, he's always been kind of close, but never quite really grasping that brass ring. Yeah, this has the potential to be the match of the tournament. And I'm going to be honest with you, given the four people that have made it to the semis, that's the best possible matchup, period. And yeah, I think it, I honestly, if I had $100, I would bet that that would be the match of the tournament. And I think it's a safe guess that Robbie Eagles is losing, but I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with that, given the possibility of, again, just a fucking phenomenal match. And Fujita just kind of taking that next step and beating his teacher. Like, that, like, the possibilities are endless. I don't think this results in any crazy, wacky angle or anything, but maybe it does. Who knows? Yeah, I think they got it right getting these two in the ring. I think New Japan absolutely fucking got it right.
So that was a wrap on the B block, which was a block that wasn't particularly good. No. I didn't love it. My favorites, obviously, Robbie Eagles. I thought he was excellent. I thought Kushida, enjoyed him a lot as well. Kanemaru is always pretty good. Ishimori was solid. I enjoyed Jacob Boston-Young probably more than most people, but Sho, Yo, Sasaki, Hyo, you know, yeah.
I think Hyo was okay. Again, the gimmick's not for me. You know, the fucking stuffed animal, I don't give a fuck about. And it's not like I'm being hypocritical in that, because when Hiromu was running around with the fucking, you know, what was the stuffed animal's name?
Daryl.
Yeah, I couldn't give two shits about that either. So, yeah, I would ban stuffed animals from all pro wrestling events. Thank you.
Then we moved on to the A block, where we kick things off with Kosei Fujita defeating Daiki Nagai 8 minutes 24 Ooh. Seconds via Boston Ooh. Crab. Damon, this match got me Ooh. Fired up. This yeah. made me feel stuff. This lit a flame in my heart, my jaded wrestling fan heart, who's just sat and watched a lot of not great stuff over the last couple of weeks. But this one, I was just like, I had a little glimpse into the future of Japanese junior heavyweight wrestling. I mean, the guy, fantastic. I love how Fujita is wrestling like all these opponents have personally insulted him. There was one chop early on where I was just like, fuck me, what has Daiki Nagai done to you, my man?
That was money, yeah.
The little bit towards the end where there was the slap from Nagai and just that bone-crunching Fujiwara armbar takedown. I've never seen one like that. It was like Fujita executed that looking like he was intending to destroy lots of bones in Daiki Nagai's arm. It just looked tremendous. And I love how he Fujita's like ripping Nagai's arm out of its socket with this big shit-eating grin on his face, like this is his favorite thing in the world. He's an absolute sadist and it rules. Like, and oh my god, the finish. The finish, the spit into Fujita's face, and that glob of phlegm, foamy saliva on Fujita's mouth, and he just looks at him like, oh, you have fucked up now. You want to play it like that, do you? Okay, fine, fuck face. Here you go. Have some of this. The headbutt. Fuck me.
Oh, yeah.
I felt that right through my bones. Like, that might be, and the Boston Crab, the high angle Boston Crab, that might be the coldest finish I've seen in the company. The disdainful tossing aside of Nagai's body afterwards, and like that little playful kicking he was doing after the match, and that when he was doing the emote with like the burying, the digging and the burying with the shovel, just the attitude and swagger and the disdain for others that Kosei Fujita exudes just reminds me, it reminds me of like prime 2017 Tetsuya Naito. And he got it, man. Like Fujita, he's cool. He's fucking cool. He's a cool guy. And if the company got any sense, they will get right behind him and make him the next star of the company. Like, fuck the weight divisions. This is the guy.
He has a a chip on his shoulder. He has this very cool, very cocky, but not like an evil cool and cocky, not evil as in Watanabe, mind you. He's got that it. And I said it before earlier in the show, and I said it to Joel before we even got on, and I'll hammer it home again. New Japan does this guy isn't supposed to win, but he's going to fucking do everything in his power to try to win and at times come close, but in the end lose, but yet still come out like honestly looking better than the guy who won, you know? There are moments when you think, oh, this company can't fucking get out of their own way. They're too left feet. Why don't they, why don't they do X, Y, and Z? And then there are moments when you think, oh, when we got it, we got it. And there's no one better. And it's the, again, what? How long did this go? A little bit over 10 minutes?
8 minutes.
Eight minutes.
8 minutes.
8 minutes. I defy you to find a better 8 minutes. I really do. This was really fucking great. And of course, you have the Corican crowd who will live and die by the underdog. It's just a thing. And they latch onto it and they were there for it. What a great 8 minutes. Like, to me, that 8 minutes I would put on to someone who doesn't like pro wrestling and say, okay, give this a taste. Give this a shot. Because it's just enough. There was enough pro wrestling and enough realism. And it wasn't overcomplicated. It wasn't like, well, why is this? It was like you could sit there and be like, oh, okay, this guy's a – and just set the table. You know, this guy's presumably the future ace of this company when it comes to juniors. This guy hasn't won a fucking match yet, but he's a fighter. Let's go. You know, and those 8 minutes of pure joy. I loved it. I really did. Look, you don't always need to have fucking Misawa Kawada. You don't always need to have Ricochet Osprey. You don't always need to have... You don't always need to have Liger Sano. It's great when it happens. Don't get me fucking wrong. Sometimes 8 minutes of real pro wrestling just hits the fucking spot like nothing else. And this delivered big time.
Yeah, this is the kind of match that I feel no other promotion on the planet can do quite like this. And in the spot that they had, it wasn't even a big spot. Like, this is the sixth match on a 10-match card. And just so simple, just the young Japanese punk against the younger Japanese punk, just acting like a pair of punks, and one of them just putting a fucking beating on the other one and putting him in his place.
Yeah.
Like, stay in your fucking lane, you little shit mouth prick. It's so good. I love it.
The spit at the end. Like, there are times where it's hokey. You know, excuse me. There are plenty of times where, you know, in pro wrestling history where that spot could be incredibly hokey. You know, if you look at fucking WWE, they would find a way to have the wacky camera angle. And, you know, I'm sure Fujita would be looking at his hands and wiping the spit off his face and then turning into a ravaging look. Like, no, it was really just everything was well done. Everything was really just well done.
Wiping the spit off on the Young Lions t-shirt ringside after the match.
right. Yeah. Yeah. The headbutt too. You were right. That headbutt put shivers down my spine. It was, look, I defy you to find a better 8 minute match. I'm sure there are. You can put this one right up there with it. I really enjoyed this. And again, it wasn't this fucking masterful, crazy move. You're going to go beat you over the head with the flips and all. No, it was just legitimately good pro wrestling. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. all the flowers.
And the seventh match was Valiente Jr. defeating Robbie X, 8 minutes, 24 seconds. Yeah, this was a really good match. I think Robbie X has had better matches, and Valiente has been a little bit underwhelming in the tournament for me. But Robbie X is just coming on leaps and bounds. Because I'm noticing all these little things about him now that I wasn't noticing before. Like, he's really good at the delayed sell, you know, when he's in a striking exchange and then he's about to fire off with another strike, but then he just kind of collapses from the pain and the wobbly knees. And I think his striking has improved massively. Like, he can lay a lariat in hard. A stiff strike exchange wasn't on my bingo card for this match. But yeah, he's had a tremendous tournament, and I expected him to be spoiled here. I didn't think he was going to go through, but he's absolutely done enough for New Japan to be having a serious think. And I said to you before, like, what have we got here?
Mate.
There is massive upside here. I know we've had the conversation before about his look. Personally, I don't think that's an issue. It doesn't seem to be preventing him from getting himself over with the fans because they fucking love him now. So yeah, wonderful stuff. Valiente Jr., again, I don't know how much of that was injury or lack of experience, but he was all right. It's just the problem I illustrated earlier in the tournament was that it's hard not to compare him to T-Tan, isn't it? And yeah, T-Tan is just so fucking great at everything. When you see, a relatively green luchador just sort of trying to figure things out and learn on the job, you're just like, well, this isn't T-Tan. Get him out of here.
Right. Anyway, and I think I'm guilty of that too, which is not fair, but yes, I'm definitely guilty of that. Robbie X, I mean, again, I think we've been trumpeting his and praising him for a while now on this show. You know, it certainly didn't start with the best of the Super Juniors, but at the very least, when it came to getting eyeballs and people tuning in, people tune into tournaments. They do. I think getting the casual eyeball on him and thinking, ooh, what has New Japan got here? Like I don't want to say that this was a career launch pad for him, but in a lot of ways, it kind of is. There's one thing to have, like, the podcasting community, praising Robbie. There's a totally other thing of having, the casual New Japan Pro Wrestling watcher finally with their, their eyes opening up to him. I really do. I think of anybody coming out of this tournament that's not going to the finals that walked away with it with more shine than not, it's probably him.
Yeah, probably one of the biggest stock rising. And I was quite keen on him at the start of the tournament, but yeah, he's tremendous.
Right, but we watch everything. You know what I mean? Like, we were there from early because we're there early. I don't even think New Japan was 100% confident in what they had. I think they knew they had a talent, but I'm not 100% sold that they were even sold on him. And I think he shut a lot of people up. And I think he opened a lot of people's eyes within the company and outside. I mean, what more could you ask for? And he's getting paid.
I was guilty of that when I watched him 3 years ago wrestling Ishimori at Royal Quest. I was like, this is Brit Rest trash. This guy stinks. I'm wrong. I love being wrong.
Me too.
And you're like I said, we've had this conversation before. Guys can improve, right? Wrestlers can get better. So a lesson for all of us.
Agreed.
Then we go on to the eighth match, which was Ryusuke Taguchi defeating Jun Kasai, 5 minutes, 10 seconds via inside cradle. We've already talked about the tiny ladder spot with the swim hat and goggles. Chris Charlton did such a terrific job. He's like, no, don't do it. I really enjoyed this match, Dave. I had a big smile on my face the whole time, just thinking about how we got to this timeline of Jun Kasai versus Ryusuke Taguchi in Best of Super Juniors. We had a bit of deathmatch stuff. We had some honest to God, proper good wrestling at the end.
We had hypodermic needles in an ass. Yeah. I never thought I would say that sentence on this podcast.
And look, do you think we can use some of the cyber agent slush fund to hire Junkasai full time? Like, can we repurpose one of these the minor singles titles as a deathmatch title? We have a question from Burning Hammer who says, it seems to me that Kasai got the biggest ovation and reaction night after night. Will he become, or should he become, a New Japan regular during his last active years? I say yes.
I wouldn't have necessarily an issue with it. I don't think that's something that he would do, because I think you lose a little bit of what makes, like, there's a big difference being a big fish in a promotion, in a smaller promotion, where you call the shots and you kind of dictate what you want to do, how you want to work, when you want to work, et cetera, et cetera, as opposed to New Japan. So I don't know. I wonder if they posed it to him, if he would jump. The only problem I would have is that, again, he's arguably the best at doing what he does when it comes to the deathmatch stuff. Would that run old? You know, would we get sick of that after a while? Would it just become like, oh, here's another skewer in the forehead? Like, I kind of like the fact that it's we got a fun taste of it. I don't know if I would want to see that all the fucking time. That said, yeah, he's incredibly popular because people know who he is. As odd as that may sound, like, people, like if you're a pro wrestling fan, you know who he is. And I will go so far as to say that even if you're not a pro wrestling fan, there's a certain percentage that actually know who he is and have heard of him and have seen him and could pick him out of a police lineup. I'm not saying every fucking person walking down the street would know, but I think there's you know, enough. But I don't know if I would want to see it full time, Joel. He did add an element and a spice to the tournament, no doubt. I think he was a great addition. I don't know if I want to see it all the time.
No, I want ice cream for dinner every day. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I will say this. The fucking hypodermic needles are crazy. Just the idea of and here's the thing too. Like, okay, don't referees. I mean, I know that, like, he's the deathmatch wrestler. So, okay. But wouldn't they check him? Don't they pat people down? That's a terrible job by the referees. I gotta be honest with you. Pulled it right out of his pocket.
After after the finish to the Jacob Austin Young Show match, it's all bets are off.
All bets off. Okay, just making sure. You know, you show that to a casual fan and be like, "What are they shooting up Class A drugs? What are they doing in the ring? What's happening?" Hypodermic needles, skewers, and a tiny, tiny ladder. The art of pro wrestling.
Ninth match was A Block Francesco Acura defeating Titan 30 minutes 54 seconds with the Tajiri inspired ground tarantula. Just great stuff. Great stuff from two great wrestlers. The match really kicked off for me when Titan did that Tekken adjacent combination. You know the one I mean, where he's just that little flurry of strikes and kicks and slaps. And I love the drama of the Jave Inmortal locked in deep, and Acura looks like he's dying and he's clawing and biting his way through Titan's mask to escape. I always want to feel, especially in the tournament situation, I want to feel that desperation. I want that to be tangible. I want to feel like this is life or death for the wrestlers, that this means everything to them. They would rather die than lose these matches. And I think both guys just carried that sense of urgency in a way that was as hard hitting and gritty and dynamic, just outstanding stuff.
Acura is great. Like, to me, he's right up there with the best, pardon the pun, of the Super Juniors. But I got to give, once again, flowers to Titan. Just, like, if there's one guy that's incredibly underrated, and I'm going to count him as a New Japan Pro Wrestling guy, I think Titan is on that list. I think even the hardcore New Japan Pro Wrestling fan, maybe they don't give enough flowers to the guy. I think he's fucking tremendous. He delivers everything that a solid quality junior should, and then some. He's there for the spectacularness. He's there for the solidness. He's there for the compelling pro wrestling. He's there for the lift me out of my seat because holy shit, I can't believe I fucking saw that move. He's fluid. He's graceful. His striking is on point. Like to me, like I would, this might be silly. I would put him top five junior, period, in the world. I would put Titan in that. Am I out of my mind?
No, I was going to say top five workers in the company. Like, never mind the weight divisions.
Okay.
He's unbelievably good. And I agree with you. He just doesn't get half of the flowers that he should get. And I really hope this just doesn't turn into a situation where they never capitalize it. Because obviously he had that incredible final with Watto in 2023. Why have we not seen anything close to that again? Like, what? Why did they not see that and think, fuck, this guy's actually amazing. Let's do something with him. Maybe they tried.
Maybe
annoyed and upset the more I think about it. Like, I get angry thinking, why are we not doing more with Titan? It's malpractice. It's promotional malpractice.
Can I ask you this? And this kind of might answer the question, but I don't know. Your question. In hindsight, knowing now that Bushiroad was on the table and they were trying to clean up books and save money and conserve fiscally, could that answer a lot of the questions of why wasn't this outside guy brought in more often or permanently? Or
we've been saying that for years, Damon. Yeah. Like all the you know, like AEW guys offering themselves for G1 climaxes and New Japan saying, no thanks, we're good. And guys inexplicably getting cut and we're never seeing from again. And us saying, why aren't they bringing this guy from Strong over? Because he's been so great. It's always been.
That's your answer. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's your answer, which is a shame. But, you know, that will go down in history again as a New Japan. What if? Again, two left feet, not being able to capitalize, but yeah, you know, this isn't about New Japan, I guess. This is about a pro wrestler that I think, quite honestly, doesn't get the flowers he deserves. And I think people, like if you said to people, hey, what do you think of Titan? And I think people would be like, awesome, great, you know, tremendous pro wrestler, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, if you just said, okay, list me the best pro wrestlers under 230 pounds, I think he would get skipped by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So that sequence of events meant that Nick Wayne was already eliminated before
the your favorite
started. Yeah. Well, no, I he's won me over. I actually think he's been very, very good. Like, especially the last few matches. I'm putting my hate to one side. I've actually quite enjoyed his work over the last week. So,
good.
But again, that being said, the drama of this match was compromised by the fact that he was already eliminated. So it was pretty obvious Watto would win to me. I mean, incredibly, Damon, I managed to successfully predict the outcome of both blocks. It's never happened to me before. It's a real blind squirrel moment for me. But I thought this match was good, but it just had none of the heat or intensity or drama or crowd investment that had punctuated the earlier matches on the card. So whilst, yeah, it was like really good match, very athletic, lots of high spots and flips and stuff and nice finish, it felt a little bit flat to me. I don't know. How did you experience it?
I thought it was a weird placement on the show, right? Are you surprised that main evented?
No, I'm not. Like, again, last night me and Chris talked about this and we agreed that this probably would be the main event because I think it was one of the only matches that had the potential of being a win and in scenario. So it made sense at the time, but just the way that the other results played out, then they kind of destroyed all that that right. drama going into it by the fact that he'd already been eliminated. So at the start of the night, no, it made sense to me, but by the time we got there, I was just like, it doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, I think that hurt the match actually, because there wasn't that. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, the way that they booked it, you know, you needed a fucking slide rule to figure it out. He beat him, tiebreakers, you know. Did you like the thing where at ringside, you know, you had the referees and the, you know, announcers and ring announcers all kind of going through the sheet and the ledger and be like, okay, this, you know, they're doing the math and the, you know, this guy's won, you know, this guy's moving on. I did like that little tiny element of it. Nick Wayne had a great tournament. What is he, 20? Is he even 21 yet? How old?
Yeah, I just had the thought, if he kind of bulks out the same way that like Will Ospreay did, he's going to be an absolute phenom when he gets a bit older.
You know, and I always like to see, and they may not say it publicly, but you know that he was like, I cannot fucking believe I am main eventing this show at Quirkin Hall. Like, there's got to be moments when you're lacing up your boots and you're like, how did I get here? You know, how did this happen? Which I think is a fucking awesome thing. It's an awesome moment. I hope every wrestler has that moment for them. Not necessarily main event in Quirkin Hall, but whatever that might be. Because I think that's what keeps you motivated. I think that's what keeps you putting in the miles and, you know, the low pay and all of that. That, like, for those moments. I thought he had an outstanding tournament. And you're right. Talk to me in 3 years. Talk to me talk to me in 2 years. Like, I think he's a stud. I think he definitely has the potential to be a guy that we're talking about in a big way in 2 years' time, in 3 years' time. I really do. Is the look for me? I mean, you know, it kind of gives you every very good indie guy out there, right?
But he's a kid. I mean, that look might change in 6 months' time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, listen, do I expect him to come out looking like fucking June Cassano? No, I don't. good for you. You're young. You're athletic. You got a great look. You're a good-looking kid. Yeah, good for you. But yeah, talk to me in a year. Let's see where we're at, because he's got so much upside. That's pretty exciting that at least, you know, like, you're seeing a lot of guys, Jacob Olsen Young, and Wayne, and even, you know, we throw flowers at him a lot. But, you know, Fujita's not like he's like 45, you know. This is a young batch of wrestlers, and wherever they may land, I think whoever locks them down are going to have fucking talent. Yeah, again, talk to me in 2 years. Talk to me in 3 years. These guys are going to be – you're not going to have any choice but to be talking about them. That's a pretty cool thought if you think about it.
Okay, so semifinals will be Friday in Gunma. So we've got Yo versus Master Watto and Robbie Eagles versus Tose Fujita. And
one the final at
Ota City on Sunday. So how do you see the rest of the tournament playing out?
Well, again, I think everybody's got a boner over Robbie Eagles and Fujita. And rightfully so. I think that match will be just outstanding. Am I as excited over Yo and Watto? No. Got to be honest with you. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't have the ability to go out there and knock my fucking socks off. They have the ability. You can't tell me. Listen to me. They do.
They don't.
They do.
With different and better opponents, they do. But with each other, they don't.
They can.
They can't. They won't. They can't and they won't.
All right. Call me optimistic, Damon.
Give me a prediction. What do you think? Like, I know we don't do star ratings, but give me a star rating. But how you think that match will go?
Conservative four. Ceiling 4.5. I think they're a 4. Definitely a 4. I'd be shocked if it was lower than a 4. I really do. They can do it.
It's even when Yo is doing very good wrestling, I just don't care.
Well, that's the problem. That is a major problem, no doubt. And I feel the same thing about Watto, to be honest with you. Like, neither of them do anything for me. I can't sit here and say that if you told me that in the beginning of the tour that I would have this, I'd probably be like, oh, fuck me. Look, we're here. You can't tell me that they don't have it. Have they really been put in opportunities to give you greatness in the ring?
I'm going to give you an obscure reference here. So in the video game Bloodborne, there's a boss called the Living Failures. So they're this like grotesque alien creature that are, like the tragic result of the Healing Church's disastrous failed experiments to artificially create a great one from humans. This is that match, right? Yo versus Master Wato is the Living Failures.
It is. Trust me. Look, you know me. Neither of these guys are on my top list of anything except top lists of disappointment. They have it. They can do it. I have faith in them. I know they can do it. And I'll come back here, the podcast after that show. And if it's not four, then I will say, look, I'm a dope. I fell for it again. I gave them too much credit. Whatever you want. Whatever you want.
Do it now. Save yourself the trouble, and we'll just clip that audio and put it in there.
Dan can loop it. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a boob. I truly and honestly believe.
Are they capable, do you think, of doing stuff in that match to make you feel something, to get you invested and get you fired up and be like, fucking come on, boys? The way that Fujita and Daiki Nagai did today.
I hear you loud and clear, dude.
It will be a nice little match, and they'll work hard, and there'll be a nice back and forth closing stretch. And I go, that was pretty good. They got me in by the end of it. This is just three and three quarter stars, but I just, you know, I wasn't that invested in it. That's what it's going to be.
That's the key. I think that's the key. Like, how invested am I going to be 12 minutes into this match? Like again, I find it very difficult to believe that they haven't experienced enough pro wrestling within this very promotion to be like, even if they copied and pasted and said, okay, let's do this spot that fucking, I don't know, whoever.
The matches on the same fucking card that you're on. Someone needs to grab them both by the scruff of the neck and press their face up against the screen and make them watch Fujita versus Daiki Nagai. And be like, fucking do that.
All right. Yeah, you're right. Trust me. Maybe that's the point I'm trying to hammer home, is that technically I think they can deliver a great match. I think the biggest challenge, and I think you nailed it right on the head, is that am I going to be emotionally invested in any of it? And do they have the wherewithal to be able to do that? And honestly, that's been the problem since day one. And they haven't really delivered on that. So I get where you're like, dude, you're fucking delusional. It ain't happening. I want to give them one more shot. I really do. I want to give them one more shot.
I'm generous. Clown makeup.
I know.
Clown makeup.
I will wear it. I will wear it like the idiot I am. You're right. Listen, do I have the same? Yeah, but I'm going to be positive. I'm going to be optimistic and say that maybe they can do it on that level. Have they proven it before? No. So again, I might be clutching at straws, but four is the ceiling, or four is the floor.
Four on the floor. So just give me a predicted final and winner, please, of Boss J.
Watto. Fujita. And I think Fujita wins again. Should. I'd be surprised. Is there any shot Robbie Eagles wins?
I don't think so, but it would be fucking sick if he did.
Right. I mean, again, maybe, again, we're fantasy booking, my apologies, but maybe it's a situation where the teacher gets one up on the student, and the student might not be too happy with that end result. And maybe a little seed, a little seed to maybe have a little taste of Robbie, not a split up maybe, but you know, a little program with the both of them. So we see more than one match. Maybe. I doubt it. I think that's a pipe dream. But I would have no problem with either one of them winning. But I think Robbie does not make it.
No, I predicted from the start that it would be a Watto Fujita final. And people laughed at me on the Discord when I said that.
Really? Who did? Who laughed at you?
Lots of people. I've got receipts, Damon.
Good. Because I want to know what I want. Is there any way that they can record audio? I want apologies, and we'll play it on this very show, and it will just be 5 minutes of Job. Sorry, I'm sure I doubted you. I'm a fucking idiot. That's what I want. That should be the crime. The crime of doubting Joel. That is it. Public humiliation. You need to record a little snippet of you groveling at the feet of Joel Abraham as he deserves.
I'll put that on the Patreon, bonus audio compilation of everyone apologizing.
That'd be great. That'd actually be really good.
Right.
Yes. Let's do it. That is your punishment, you fucks. Just make sure your debit card goes through. That's all I care about. <I'm
kidding. laughs> All right. Fuck off. See you next week.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full-course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.